This is FM 2.0 with the Don, Dean, Stormy, and the Grizz. Forever music.
Ladies and gentlemen, here we are. This is the Don. We got Dean Baldwin here. But we're really excited here because we've got the legendary Glenn Hughes of Deep Purple fame and many other things. How you doing, Glenn?
I'm doing fine. Thank you so much.
Well, you know, there's so much to talk about. You should see the notes that Dean and I have. It's about three pages, but we'll summarize this. First thing is, you know, comments are made. Like, one thing that really blew my mind from a comment was one that Stevie Wonder gets credited for, calling you his favorite white singer. What an amazing, and when you listen to like your work on Trapeze, like the song "Your Love Is All Right."
Right.
Where did you, I mean, was this a natural thing, this beautiful voice you have, that was it natural, or did you have to work at it? How did that come about?
I grew up as a child basically playing instruments before I realized I had some kind of a voice, you know. Mm-hmm. So for me to find myself towards in my late teens, being basically being acknowledged as a singer, because I was all about playing, you know, an instrument. And then, you know, I became this voice that we all now know, and having worked with and met all the great singers in my lifetime from the 60s, as you know who they are, all the Black American singers who I love, and to become friends with them and work with them has been astronomically brilliant.
You know, that ties into something, you know, one of the big things we wanted to talk about, obviously, is, you know, your shows coming up that you're currently on tour with, and we're talking about Burn.
Yeah.
But, you know, getting back to the vocal part, you know, those musicians you just mentioned that were an influence, yes, that also have an influence on your bass playing.
Yes.
Interesting, right?
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's always been about the soul of the music. I am really not a technician at all. I'm a very feeling musician, right, especially a very, in my opinion, a very emotional singer. So for me, it's always been about the feeling of music rather than technical.
You've actually teed up a question I've had for years. I've actually talked about this on Deep Tracks a number of times. So you're associated with blues rock music, but yes, when you take a song though from Stormbringer, "You Can't Do It Right."
Right.
Are you a funk bassist at heart? I mean, that's some soul on that song.
Yes, I am. Very much influenced again by Tamla Motown, as we basically touched on. So for me, guys, yes, I am world renowned as being a rock man, a rock person. But underneath it all, I am heavily influenced by R&B. And when you mix it all up together, you mix the R&B and the funk and the rock together, you find me.
Yeah, that album, and I know you're torn on Burn, but Stormbringer, so you got two albums that come out within a 12-month period. And I'm not going to say they're vastly different, but there are some differences there in terms of the vibe.
There are.
And Stormbringer, I love. "You Can't Do It Right," I really love. I had read that Richie didn't like that album.
I think that he took his foot off the gas on that album, hence John David and myself writing primarily most of the album. The band, look, fellas, in general, music is always changing. And with me, I've always pretty much continuously changed, wearing the rock hat, if you will. But I like to change. I like to continuously change.
That's beautiful. That was going to be the other question. You know, do you see yourself? You know how some musicians are perfectly comfortable. They define themselves. I am a rock guitarist, metal guitarist. I am a blues guitarist. But then you have musicians that, and I'm this way, the more you try to define what I am, the more I'll probably rebel against you and try to prove you wrong. Would that be you? You like to be whatever you want to be.
With respect, with respect, that's exactly who I am. I don't mean to go out of my way to maybe upset anyone, but David Bowie lived with me for quite some time in the mid-70s, and he was always one for changing, as you know.
Yeah, let's talk about it.
I threw away all my flared pants and stuff, and I always took it from him to always change. And that's what if you listen to any of my solo albums, and you may have done that, you'll notice that I'm always changing. But again, wearing the rock hat, if you will, but always keeping it changeable.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Yeah, we definitely love it, right? And, you know, looking at the backstory, you know, when you were writing that album, and you know, it was 50 years ago.
Yeah.
1973. I won't even say how old I was in 1973.
Yes.
I was two.
I know.
But I was 2 years old, so I didn't know what you were doing at that point yet. But you wrote it at a castle,
yes,
right? In Gloucestershire.
Yeah.
So mystifying, right? And it had to be an incredible experience.
We were always looking, if from the early days, for somewhere to create. Right. And what finer place to create than a 600-year-old castle? And not only that, we were in the dungeon writing the music, you know. So can you imagine what that was like?
What were the acoustics like?
Yeah.
The acoustics were incredible. You can imagine. Again, it was meant. I'm always. We live in a preordained life. I think everything is set out for us. That album was supposed to be made in the summer of 1973, and I'm supposed to be talking to you about it right now.
Right. Amazing, right? You didn't think you would. You did you ever imagine that you'd be talking about these songs or touring on these songs 50 years later?
Did you
ever think about that?
Look, when you're that young, I was 21 or 22, when you're that young, you don't really think about being in your 70s or 60s.
No, you're right.
Because when we're that young, people like my age right now, we're old and decrepit. And
oh, stop.
But here I am, again, smiling because I've lost a lot. We've lost a lot of friends, you know, in these last 2 years. And as you know, my peer group, let's call it the friends I have that are, as you know, in my age group, they're either disappearing, retiring, or passing away. So if I'm one of the last men standing, I'm very honored.
But isn't it cool that you're still out there rocking? I remember back in the 80s when Tina Turner came back on her Private Dancer album, and all the talk was how incredible it was for her age to be doing that. She was in her 40s. So that was, you know, we wouldn't even write an article now about an artist coming back in their 40s. It's just not a big deal. And to see the generation, your generation, still out there just rocking.
Let me tell you a story about Tina. It was 1989, the year I remember her having, it may have been 88, but 89 was the year I decided I was going to get sober. And she was a big help for me. I knew her. And to see her have that comeback, if you will, was a good reason for me to take a good long look at the things I may have been doing incorrectly. So she was a big, big help for that. So, look, I've been doing this a long time. I have been in recovery a long time, as you know, and that's what saved me.
That's a great story, especially for someone like Tina who just left us. You're speaking of people that left us recently.
Yeah.
He's another one. And
That was a tough one.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, getting back to the show, right? And looking at the songs that you've been doing on your tour, there's one on here that really is one of my all-time favorites. It's Mistreated.
Yes.
And what I love about Mistreated, and just looking some of the backstory of this, this was the song that Richie basically had in his pocket.
Right. It's the only one. The only one he had in his pocket.
The only one, because he had recently done and released everything he had, but he held on to this one.
Yes, he had. Before we went to the castle, I was at Richie's home, and Richie asked me to come in the kitchen. There was a couple of guitars. And he said, I've got an idea for a song. And he started playing the intro to Mistreated. Oh. A little voice in my head said, everything is going to be okay.
Right?
Yeah.
I believe it when I hear it. I mean, I hear it every time and I get goosebumps immediately.
I do too. It's a great song. I'll sing it.
So when, and that brings me to the infusion of, and I know Dean's got something on this too. You know, that time, that transition when two members are leaving and then you're coming in with David.
Yes.
That, you know, you like you said, then you hear Mistreated. What was that like for you? Were you excited? Because you were just coming out of Trapeze.
Yes.
Going into this.
Yes.
And now do you have these memories now when you get on stage and you're playing these songs of that time period back then, of going through those things? Do you feel that on stage still?
Well, I do. I have a great connection with David and John, who's no longer with us, and Tommy Bolin, of course. So for me, guys, to do these songs, I don't try to go back too far. I don't really believe in living in the past, really, although I am playing a nostalgic show. For me to recreate these songs is an honor for me, because I know people love these songs. It's an iconic set list of songs.
Yes, it is.
So for me to nightly do this work is a real serious honor.
Right. Dean, you had something about that too, right? Number transition too?
Yeah, I'd seen an interview, a prior interview, where you were talking about as you were coming on board, there was the brief discussion with Paul Rodgers possibly coming on, but he ended up doing Bad Company at the same time. And I guess what I didn't fully understand was, because you had said very briefly, there was a moment where you're like, well, wait a minute, I'm a singer. And then you made peace with that. So initially, was the idea that you would come on as the primary singer and bass player or not? Was there always going to be that the other vocalist?
To be honest with you guys, I wouldn't have joined if I – listen, I didn't barge in there and tell them I've got to sing. They knew – they'd been checking me out for a good year in 1972 and 73, knowing that I was this lead singing bass player, as you know. Mm-hmm. And if they said to me, we only want you to play bass, I would have declined. And the idea of working with my friend Paul would have been wonderful. So it didn't happen, but – yeah.
And in looking at your set list too, now you also do Highway Star. You're doing that on your current show, right? From the Machine Head album?
For me, it's a song that I'm doing to please people or promoters, or it's something that I'd rather be just doing my material.
Right.
Cause some kind of a discussion on the internet. But, at some point, I'll stop playing that song.
I see. Well, the reason I bring it up, Glenn, is because, you know, those two songs sometimes are put head to head of best starting songs on an album with Burn and Highway Star. Burn's fascinating to me in that, and I'll shut up in a second, but why Burn is fascinating to me is it's the last song you wrote and it becomes the first song on your album. And it launches it.
Crazy, isn't it? And you know something? You know, my encores on this tour are Highway Star and Burn. It's difficult for anybody to play when I've done those songs. It really is. You can only look at the audience's reaction. So for me, again, playing these songs in this time frame, because, guys, I won't be doing this forever. There's only so many months I can do this. I'd say another 18 months, but then I'll retire this show and I'll go back to being simply Glenn.
Glenn, yes. And your other projects you're doing.
Yeah.
You've got a lot of other things you're working on, like with Joe Bonamassa and all that.
Yeah.
That's coming next spring, by the way.
Ooh. There's a guitar player to play with.
Yes.
Joe Bonamassa. That has to be fun.
He's one of my closest friends.
Oh, wow. You know, Dean, in your notes, too, there was something that really fascinated me that I hope we bring up here. We might as well at this point. It had to do with
pairings.
Yes, pairings.
Yeah, yeah. When I think about all the musicians, all the great musicians you have played with, and now, you know, as you address your style, who you are at the core of that. If you could pair yourself with any drummer, any guitarist, past or present, that maybe you haven't played with yet, who do you think would be the ideal pairing in your mind?
Oh my God. I mean, well, I think I've played with everybody really, haven't I? I mean, I've played with John and Jason Bonham. I've played with Chad Smith. I've played with Steve Gadd, Bernard Purdy, Kenny Aronoff, Ian Pace, Dave Holland, Stanley Clark on the bass.
Oh, Stanley.
Wow. I mean, I played with Satriani, Brian May, Richie Blackmore, Tony Iommi, Tommy Bolin, Mel Galley. Wow.
Have you played with Vernon Reed?
No, he's a good friend, though.
That is, honestly, that's a pairing I'd love to see. I've thought about that. Wow, you with Vernon Reed.
You never know.
Yeah, let's make that happen. I would love to hear that.
Yeah.
Wow. I was gonna, we were going to change the question to, who haven't you played with?
Yeah.
Well, funny thing is, Jeff Beck and I were supposed to make an album 30.
Oh, no.
PBS contacted me, the president, and said, we want Jeff to do a vocal album. And it was 25 years ago, and it never worked out. And Jeff and I, he asked me to join his band in 1972 when he was having, you know, the Jeff Beck group. And I was in trapeze. I didn't want to leave my band. So I love Jeff, and I miss him. I just wished I could have done that album with him.
Yeah, go ahead, Dean.
Go on.
No, so this just opened up another thing in my head is, who's the guitarist that you felt like you gelled with the best when creating music? And anyone you've ever played with, or just felt so natural?
Well, there's been quite a few, but I think Joe Bonamassa and Pat Thrall have been remarkably great for me, you know.
Yeah, because Joe has that beautiful style.
Joe and I wrote the new album, which is coming next spring. I've just heard mixes in the last couple of days. It's spectacular. So it's an interesting album.
Are you doing also in these shows? Is Yngwie with you also?
Yeah, we're doing this co-headline tour right now. We're almost at the end now. We'll be finished this weekend in Florida, and then I go to Brazil for one show.
Wow. I've had the honor of interviewing Yngwie too, and that's, I just, wow, I was hearing, because I saw that he actually recorded Mistreated himself. Yeah. He did a cover.
He's done that. I mean, it's an interesting show because my style is different to his. Yngwie's a neoclassical guitar player, very fast, as you know, very fluid, and my music is completely different, although we're both classic rock artists, as you know.
Did you ever meet Stevie Wonder, by the way?
He's a good friend. Yes,
I met him. Good friend.
There you go. I was recording the album Stormringer at the record plant in 1975. I met Stevie in the toilet.
Really?
I invited him to come in the studio while I was singing a song called Hold On. And we became good friends.
Wow. Awesome. How many stories start with, I built a friendship with Stevie after meeting him in the bathroom?
No, I mean, it's a well-known story for me. If the fans of mine know the story, he came out and I said, would you like to come in and listen to it? I basically told him I was a super fan, which I am. And since then, I still see him every other year, and long may that continue.
So one of the final questions is then, what is your favorite Stevie Wonder song? The one that you would turn to and listen to that makes you feel it.
I like Superwoman.
Superwoman.
Yeah.
There we go. We got to tie that in when we mix this interview up. We're going to put in that little piece there. Wow, Glenn, I'm telling you.
So the last thing I want to get your thoughts on, because I ask everybody this almost as if I'm doing some type of unofficial research, but you've seen a lot of changes in the industry.
Yes.
And when you think about where we're at now with the use of artificial intelligence, I'll just tell you, I have concerns about it. I think it's a great tool. I do worry about it making artists.
Yes.
I don't want to say lazy, but sometimes your best stuff comes through you know, just trial and error, screwing stuff up, et cetera.
Correct.
What concerns do you have about that? Or are the things in the industry that you just, yeah, really give you concern?
Well, my problem with the AI is you're going to have people, you know, duping people, saying this is this person, or, and it's so easy now to duplicate someone's voice or image that it's going to have a lot of artists, newer artists and older artists, in serious trouble. It's mentally it's really difficult to deal with, you know, something like this. But it's been coming, and I have to say, I don't want to embrace it, but we're going to be forced to embrace it. So we have to somehow make the most of it.
Yeah, my big fear, and I actually dedicated my entire show on Classic Rewind a few weeks back. I spent the whole 6 hours, I think, talking about it, which is music for me. If I think about the songs I've loved over my life, it's usually because I find some type of connection with the artist on the other side. There's that human element. So now that I hear about them creating this platform, I think it's Google and Universal, where they're going to create AI-generated music, I don't know how, as a human, I connect to a song where there's no human on the other end of it. And if we actually get to the point where future generations are able to do that, it worries me.
But guys, look, for the last 10 years, we've had the computerized crap, and press a button and it's different, and the auto-tune. It's been coming and it's getting worse and worse. You can have a hit record now by just pressing a note on a bloody keyboard. But it's been coming, and somehow I'm hoping, really hoping again, we can have a good singer-songwriter with one acoustic guitar playing 3-minute songs and turning this whole thing around.
I have faith that'll happen.
I do too.
I really do. Because again, with that music, without it, we are nothing. I'm serious. Like it's such oxygen for me, and I need it to come from a human being. So.
Every night on stage, maybe a few times, music is the healer. It's the only thing that is going to help us. Music, healing product of our life.
Preach on.
Preach on. Let me just say, before we let Glenn go, the shows that are remaining, we got the Palladium in Worcester, Mass. Yep. I said it right. Jurgles in Warrendale, Pennsylvania. That's you only, too. That's just you.
Sure, that's me.
What do you acoustic or no, it's just a solo?
An extension of what I'm doing, you know, on the other thing. I get to play a couple of more songs because the both of us are only allowed so many minutes. So I get to play an extended show. So, yeah.
I see no Yngwie there. That's what that means. It's not Glenn Hughes only, meaning your solo.
Band will be with me.
Your band will be with you. I thought you were just going out there, just you and your guitar, man.
You never know with me.
You never know, right? And then Fort Lauderdale, and then where I live, Capitol Theater, you know I need to be there.
You need to watch it. It's great.
I live in Clearwater.
Cool.
So it's not far from me. I will be there the 23rd to watch you.
That'd be great.
I'll be screaming, singing back.
Come on.
That's it, man. Glenn Hughes, everybody. Got everything you need, Dean?
Thank you.
All right. Thank you. It was an honor, Glenn.
You're very welcome. Great day.
Thank you.
You too. Thank you, Glenn Hughes, everybody.